Hello, and welcome to Stronger Together,
a podcast about strength, wellness, and navigating the hard things.
I'm Charlotte.
And I'm Leslie.
And we're yoga and mindfulness instructors who know that the path to wellness isn't easy.
And it's even harder without community.
We're here to offer real conversations,
raw and honest moments,
and to remind you that you're never alone.
So make yourself comfy.
And let's do it.
Because we are all stronger together. Hello, everyone. Welcome back. On today's episode, we're talking about self-worth and how easy it is to let others determine that for us. But before we get started, let's take a nice deep breath together. Inhale. And exhale. Hey, Char.
Hey, Les. How are you doing?
I'm doing okay. I'm a little tired today. So I'm feeling like I hope that I can form words.
If you can't, that's okay, because we're stronger together and I got you.
Okay. Thank you, my love.
Of course.
I'm excited about this episode. I know this has been in your heart for a while.
Yes. I am super motivated to speak about this because I'm actually going through some of what we're going to be talking about really deeply currently. So the motivation behind this episode really stemmed like a couple weeks ago when I noticed my engagement on Instagram just tanking. And with that tank of engagement, loss of followers, my reels not being seen by like anybody, I just felt unworthy. I felt like I was failing on social media. I felt like nobody cared about my business or anything that I had to say. And then I realized how silly it was to let those numbers determine that feeling for me and let me feel that. And there's such a difference between knowing that it's silly and actually feeling that it's silly. And I still don't think I've mastered the feeling that it's silly. Because logically, I know that I determine my own self-worth. But in practice, it's a lot harder to actually feel.
Not only do you know that you determine your own self-worth, but you know that you are so valued by so many people. And even if we forget sometimes, you know, it's that sense of, you know, how important the work is that you're doing, and you have like a beautiful following, and you get like DMs from people and, you know, feedback in person about all the great work that you're doing. So it's interesting to see how, you know, that metric can like bring us back to that place of like just feeling insecure. It really holds up a mirror to our own insecurities and where we place like our identity. I know for myself, I've realized a lot more recently that a lot of my identity I place in my role as an educator. So, and I know I talked a little bit about that in I think last week's episode, but it's like the sense of, if I'm not being an effective educator, then who am I? And those insecurities can really bubble up and then feel like they're going to spill over.
Definitely. And I feel like the conversation that we're having and about to have really lends itself nicely to what we did speak about last week, because there's a lot of expectation weaved into our self-worth. We expect to be liked by everybody. We expect everybody to see the world the way that we see the world and find value in what we find value in. And when that doesn't happen, it can be really, it can shake us.
And when you reached out to me about this episode, I think the exact day I was having like a nice, long, meaningful conversation with a friend about, in particular, kids in college right now thinking there's only one track to success. And this idea of one measure, one metric, and how harmful and detrimental that can be, because we all know that there's not one path for each person. But it, I don't know, like, I feel like there's this conflict between what we say and what we believe, and then sometimes how we act toward others. And I think that that contributes to a lot of what we're talking about, letting culture, other people, social media determine our jobs, determine our self-worth.
I agree completely. And something else that I'm experiencing right now in this moment probably is, I had a few videos on TikTok go viral this weekend, and the videos that I posted were completely innocent. Like, I was sharing part of my love story. It was Russ and my 11th anniversary, and I was sharing a little bit about our relationship, and some people took what I was sharing a complete different direction. And the comments became very nasty. And I have been like obsessed with reading the comments. And every single time I read something that's nasty, I'm like, is this true? Am I a bad person? All of these questions about my own self-worth that I know as a fact are not true, but seeing and being told, you are X, you are Y, you are selfish, you are stupid, you are insecure, it makes me almost believe that. And so that's like what you were just saying. It's one thing to know something, but it's another thing to feel something. And so that's why I really want to talk about this stuff, because we are stronger together. And we've said this so many times. The podcast is as healing to us as it is as healing to our listeners. And this theme of letting others determine our self-worth, we've seen it all throughout our lifespan. And when I was thinking about what we're going to talk about today, I was really kind of diving into, where does this start? When do we start giving away our power? And it starts when we're really, really young for a lot of people. I know everybody lives different lives, but there are common examples that we'll mention that probably you have gone through at least one of them. And the first one I was thinking about is just like milestones as we're growing, as we're children, when we start crawling, when we start walking, when we start talking. And I'm curious if, you know, you have two kids, if you've experienced as a mother any milestones that your boys hit or didn't hit at the quote unquote correct time.
Yeah, it's funny because when I just want to back up to something that you said before I answer that question, because when you first said, when do we start to give away our power? My first instinct was middle school, because I see it happening. And I'm not saying there aren't moments of it that happen when we're younger, but that place of being like 11, 12 years old, that middle school time, that is like a real time of insecurity, looking for outside validation. You see it. I know, because in my career, I've taught as low as first grade and as high as seventh grade. So I can really get to see that like linear progression. And I always say, it's when the kids stop skipping. It's like, because I would always see learners skipping in the hallway, skipping on the playground, like just so unabashedly joyful. And then something happens, and a lot of it is, you know, hormonal and things like that. And, you know, being that place between being a kid, you know, being that tween, right? You're no longer a kid, but you're not a teenager yet. And there's so much, the kids do so much outsourcing for their self-worth, for their confidence, for their sense of self-value. But anyway, yeah, I do want to talk about milestones a little bit, because my oldest son, it was a preemie. He was born at 34 weeks. And he spent some time in the NICU, and he ended up, you know, it was help, you know, compared to what I know some people who have preemies and that story, what that can look like. I think that it all worked out, but at the time, you know, it was really challenging. But something that you learn when you have a preemie is that the kids meet their milestones at the time where they were supposed to be born. So let's say the average kid walks at, you know, 12 months. Well, then I would have to tack on a month and a half to that. And then that would have been my son's typical milestone, even though we know there are ranges for all of them. So had I not known that, I would have felt like he wasn't reaching his milestones at the right time. Had I not been armed with that information, I think I would have been like, oh my gosh, why isn't he crawling? Why isn't he rolling over? Why isn't he talking? Why isn't he walking? But because I had that information, but here I am getting it from an external source, a book, a doctor, then I was like, oh, okay, everything's fine. But what if he, you know, wasn't a preemie and just still like reached those milestones when he did? Like, I don't know. I'm sure that would have been a source of stress.
Yeah. And I almost wonder, like, do you feel like you would feel embarrassment as a mom if your kid didn't meet the milestone at the time that it was expected them to meet?
I mean, I could imagine feeling like worried, and then depending on who is in your circle. When you're a new mom, if you don't know a lot of other moms yet, you're kind of like finding your way. If you happen to be like in a judgmental crowd, or in a crowd of moms who are insecure in their own way. And then the way that they find their validation is through their kids. And it's like, well, my son's already talking complete sentences and he's only 11 months old. If that's the case, then yeah, absolutely. I could see that being a potential problem, a source of stress or a source of worry for me. And then almost feeling like I have to, well, if he's not walking yet, let me play up some of the other strengths. And then all of a sudden you're like literally comparing 1-year-olds to each other. Like, it's crazy.
It's so silly. And the reason I asked about embarrassment is because when I was thinking about the different, you know, kind of like milestone timelines in which we give our power away, embarrassment came up a lot. I feel like that's a common theme. But before I dive further into that, I want to go back to what you said about when kids stop skipping. Mm. Have you seen the videos on TikTok recently of adults being asked to skip?
Oh my gosh, no.
So there's this trend going around where pretty much like millennials will ask their parents or their grandparents or their bosses who are, I don't know, maybe like in the 60 to 80 age range. And they'll say, skip to me. And people forget how to skip. It's so silly if you go on TikTok and you look at these videos because people are like, they don't know how, they physically don't know how to skip. And when I was watching those videos, I thought like, where did that carelessness, I guess it is carelessness. Where did those feelings of joy and innocence go? When did we stop skipping? And there we go. We have an answer. Middle school.
Middle school. I think you mean like we lose that sense of being carefree.
Yes, not careless.
And it is. It's just this sense of like, you know, you're using the word silly a lot. I don't know if that's intentional or not, but a lot of this is like, I might look silly. I feel silly. I don't want to feel different than others. No one else is skipping in the halls. Whereas when I used to teach the lower elementaries, first and second grade, not only would they skip, but they would grab the hand of a friend and then they would skip together. I mean, it's like, it's pure joy. And just like, I am not worried. And I have this movement in my body. And it makes me feel good. I did see a couple of kids cartwheeling recently in the halls, and then I had to tell them to stop. Just because, you know, that's a whole nother issue. You can't be like doing acrobats in the hallways during the passing periods. But anyway, and I actually said when I spoke to the student, another teacher said, you know, your student was just cartwheeling up and down the halls. And when I spoke to her, I said, like, I'm so happy that you're happy, but we need to walk in the hallways. You can cartwheel at recess and things like that. But it is just this idea of who's watching me, who's judging me. And I just want to get back to what you were saying a little bit about your TikTok. Like, I haven't been on TikTok in days. And when I have been in the last few weeks, it's been really short little bursts. And I had no idea that that happened to you. You know, I get like protective of you when that happens. But do you think that there is like a sense of like jealousy or insecurity from somebody else? Like feeling like who are you to be pushing out this content? Like the origin of you being on the receiving end of that where you didn't deserve to be.
For sure. And there are a lot of people backing me up in the comments saying just that. Real quick, I'll just kind of say what the issue is. So I was sharing pretty much like me and Russ's love story. And there was a comment that said, how long did you guys break up for? And because we broke up after 6.5 years for 2 years. And so I was explaining that, you know, we broke up for 2 years. And in that 2 years, we explored life as individuals. We dated other people, but we still remained connected. Like our souls were always connected. And I explained that we would stay in touch. Like, it's not like we would text 24/7, but if big milestones happen, we would text and we would let each other know while we were broken up. And the people in the comments took that as I was emotionally cheating on the boy who I dated after Russ, and all of these allegations about how it was selfish of me and Russ to break up because we got back together, and a lot of name calling and a lot of just their own, from what I can imagine, a lot of the people who have commented maybe have experienced being cheated on or have seen people that they love been cheated on or have had a person that they date leave them to go back with their ex. And like, I understand that happens. And I understand that there is truth in the fact that it's not always a clean situation when two people break up and end up back together. But I do know for a fact that it was clean for me and Russ. And never did I ever cheat on the man I dated after Russ. Never did I ever do anything that these people are saying that I did. And so that's kind of where it is. I know my truth, and these people think they know my truth. And so it's really difficult to be on the receiving end when people are calling you all these names that you know not to be true. But there's this element of, okay, my video has 1 million views now. Now all of these people who looked at the video think that I'm a bad person. And under a microscope of 1 million views, there's a lot of like vulnerability there, because I'm being seen by so many people. And so that's where I really noticed this feeling of like, oh my gosh, I have to defend myself. I have to do all these things to make everybody know that I'm not a bad person. But the truth of the matter is, the fact of the matter is, I know my truth, and I know that I'm not a bad person. And I know what these people are saying is false. And what I also know as a user on TikTok is that when I watch videos, I watch a video, I scroll to the next, and I cannot tell you the video I watched before that. And so me thinking that it's this huge deal that all these people are thinking I'm a bad person, they already forgot by now. And so why am I letting that ruin my day and bring me down and make me feel like absolute poop when it's not going to stick with them? So it's just been a very strange couple of days. And I'll talk a little bit later about like what I've done to protect myself from it. But it's been weird, and it's been eye-opening to recognize the fact that there's a lot of my power given to other people on the internet.
I'm so sorry that you experienced that. That is just, it feels like middle school. And it's interesting that you said I gave my power away to people on the internet, because like, it feels like, you know, middle school bullying in the cafeteria. And you know, so it's interesting, because I think that there's a fine line between like what we define as our moral compass and our own self-governed rules. So it sounds like the origin of a lot of those comments were what somebody personally thinks is a relationship rule, or perhaps their self-worth is really entrenched in being in a relationship, right? So because of that, they create all of these goals, all of these rules, and judgments on like, there's only one way to be in a relationship. There's only one way to break up or make up, or, I mean, a lot of what you said, as I was listening, I was like, that sounds ridiculous, but you know, that's also actually me being judgmental. But I think, as we know, how the danger of inserting our metrics of a successful relationship on someone else, that's what happens, right? So if we think traditionally there's only one way to have a relationship, and this is what it has to be, and this is the path, and this is how it begins, this is how it sustains, and this is how it ends, then anything else that deviates from that is wrong. And that's us imposing our version of success onto everyone else. And it's potentially dangerous, harmful. And I think it really stops us from growing as humans. And I also think that the way that you have your page set up in your social media, like you are really putting out authentic content, and you're really trying to make meaningful connections with people. This is not a popularity contest for you.
Exactly. And that brings us into, you know, where I think a lot of this stems from. It is grade school, and it is wanting to be popular. When we grow up, we want to be liked by everybody, like we said before. Like that's a lot of what we see on social media, people wanting to be influencers. They want to have influence. They want to be popular. And because that means they are worthy. And I don't know, I just remember growing up in the school district that I went to, there were the cool kids, there were the nerds, and everybody wanted to be the cool kid. And I look now on Facebook, I graduated in 2011. So it's been a while since I've been in school, and those groups of cool kids and nerds are totally broken up now. And everybody's just living their own life. They're doing their own thing, and what clique they were in high school means nothing. And so it's crazy the difference in energy between being in school and experiencing wanting to be popular to now. There's such a shift. And as we grow, We grow in our mindset. We grow in every sense of that word. And we recognize that it really doesn't matter who we once were, because we are individuals and we are all going to offer something different. So I think that school, like we were just talking before, is a place where a lot of this begins, between getting good grades and bad grades and getting punished for getting bad grades. Like there's a lot of polarity, those two things. Like there's a lot of good and bad, A or F. And at the end of the day, when school is done and we're in the real world, those grades don't really matter. We see a lot of people not even going to college and having really successful lives. And it's just really complex as we get older. And I think mentioning college, like that's another big one. Which college did you go to? Everybody wants to go to a good college. I remember I started my college career at Cortland and it wasn't for me. So I transferred home and I went to Suffolk Community College for 2 semesters. And I never told anybody about it because I was embarrassed. And that was just my like interim before I went to St. Joseph's. And it's really silly because I got an education, but I didn't want to tell people the whole story because I was scared of being judged. I was scared that I would feel embarrassed because other people would think I was stupid.
I think that I think everybody can relate to that, whether they had a similar experience or not, because we all can feel like that moment where we're like, I'm just going to leave this little part of the story out because this is where I feel insecure, or, you know, I don't need to share my whole story because, you know, we'll say, oh, it's not relevant, or they don't need to know, or it's private, right? Like I'm entitled to my privacy. But I think a lot of times what that means is I don't want to be judged by others. And it's so funny because I'm thinking of like literally the plot of every teen movie, and then they flash forward and it's like the popular kids are a hot mess and, you know, the quote unquote nerdy kids are successful and happy and hot and all of that. And it's like, yeah, why is that a tried and true storyline? It's because everybody knows it doesn't matter. But when you're in that moment, and I say that to my kids all the time as they're having trouble and they're struggling to fit in at school, I wish I could give you a crystal ball and I wish I could show you the future. And I wish I could show you like what you think matters the most now doesn't matter. What matters now is your effort and your kindness and who you are as a human. That's how we measure success. But I have to say, and once again, universally, we're recording this right at a time where I did something like so connected to this in my school today. And, anybody follows me on Twitter, I tweeted about it, but we did part of our building-wide social and emotional learning. So in my class, we do SEL every day, but we have this really incredible building-wide program where I think it's every 6 weeks, the whole building stops and we all do the same lesson. And it has like mindful moments and it has a lot of like, you know, we call it agency hour because we're trying to teach the children that they have agency over their own self-worth, self-management, self-awareness, that they are in control. And it's so much of what you're saying. And like, it's our hope that this doesn't have to be the place where they start to give away their power, that we're changing things at the middle school level, where they're understanding they have agency, they have choice, they have control. And we do it in a fun way. And we do it in a way that, you know, keeps their attention. But today for our last lesson, we talked about the interconnectedness of the school year, and the kids were all sitting in a circle and we had a ball of yarn. And when it was anybody's turn to talk, they had to hold on to their piece of yarn, but then throw the ball of yarn. So then it was like this big web, and it showed, you know, symbolically, it showed the interconnectedness of our class. And then every once in a while we would see like, okay, everybody stop and just gently pull, and you would feel the give back. And it's like everybody's experiences impact each other when we share space and we share a learning space, or we share a workspace, or we're in a relationship, whatever that is. But one of my learners who's high achieving, so when they got the ball of yarn, they said the prompt was to share something that they want to hold on to, they want to remember. And a lot of them shared struggles that they overcame, and it was really powerful. I literally like cried through the whole circle today. But she said, I want to share a moment where I got a bad grade. And she goes, well, in my opinion, it was a bad grade, right? Another learner would have been like, skipping down the halls, like if they got that grade. And she said, what I learned from that experience is that I'm so much more than my grades. And that's what I want to hold on to. That's what I want to hold on to from this year. So I'm like, okay, they're 11, they're 12. Like, I think as a society, we have to realize the importance of this and we have to have conversations. I will literally say, don't give your power away. I teach them the word empowerment at the age of 11. I didn't know what empowerment meant until I was deep into adulthood. So I think that there is this unraveling, I'm hoping, of like the old systems and the old programming. And I'm hoping and I'm praying that this does make an impact. And I know that we're still fighting societal pressures and social media and, you know, the things that, I mean, you're a successful adult and you're fighting like right now on TikTok, you're fighting that feeling of saying like, oh my God, I made a mistake, or I'm not doing a good job. So I'm hopeful for the future, but I know that it's literal constant work, constant. And I want to ask you, if you didn't have over 1 million views, would you have deleted that post, do you think? Did you feel attacked?
Well, if it didn't have so many views, well, I did make a pretty penny on it because it got so many views. But if it didn't have negative comments, no. But if it only got a few views and people were just really nasty, I probably would have deleted it. Yep.
Yeah, I probably would have done the same thing because it's like, why am I putting myself out there for this exposure? And that feels really hurtful, right? I'm glad that you made some money on that view. You deserve it.
I know. Thank you. Yeah, it's one thing that I've been doing. So like the video started to go viral on me and Russ's anniversary. So we were having this like really beautiful day. And then I would like check TikTok and I would be like, ugh. And he would be like, Charlotte, stop reading the comments. I'm like, well, I can't, like, I literally could not stop. And what I started to do today, because the mean comments were just continuing to come in, like I just started to delete them. So now the video has more positive comments than negative comments. And when I look at it, it's not as much of a, like, I'm holding my breath to see what people wrote. It's more like, these people get it. These people understand what I'm trying to say. And there's so much power. Like, I took the power back in saying, this is my video. And what these people are commenting, it's kind of like ugly graffiti on my artwork. Some graffiti, some comments are beautiful and I'm going to choose to keep them, but some graffiti really, really not good, really not good for my mental well-being. And so the cool thing is with social media, I know we're talking about a lot of different ways that we give our power away, but one common one is social media, and we can curate what we see and what we engage with. And, it can just really, it can be a lot better for our mental well-being. So basically what I was thinking about with my TikTok example and with all these other examples is that there's a root of embarrassment and shame. And it's because, like we said before, we want to be accepted by other people. And when we're not accepted, we feel like an outcast. We feel embarrassed. We feel unworthy. But the truth and the fact of the matter is that we cannot please everyone. Like, I don't like everybody that I've crossed paths with. I'm not going to be nasty, but I don't share the same vibration with other people. And how silly of us to assume that we can be liked by everybody. So we've got to start to practice letting ourselves define our own self-worth and reassuring ourselves. And like we said in the last episode, this stuff is way easier said than done, but it's easier done when we practice it. So how can we practice it? I think the first way, as always, is to notice when it's happening and take a breath.
I love that you said the comment about kind of curating your feed for, you know, to make yourself feel good, because I don't think that we're doing that enough. And that's something that you and I have talked about and practiced, and like, there's a great feature on social media. It's called muting. And you, if you're nervous about, you know, unfollowing people, but if you are feeling like the digital media that you are consuming is interfering with your sense of self-worth, which will eventually, you know, kind of screw with your self-identity and then your emotional well-being, it's really important that that's a practice of mindfulness, you know, that you say, how do I feel when I'm going through these posts? What can I do about it? Do I need to unfollow somebody? Do I need to mute them? Am I triggered? I mean, I think there's people that probably are triggered by us. They're just not interested in our friendship, in our conversations, in whatever it is like that we represent. And I say that's okay, right? And I know that that's okay. But I bet if somebody confronted us and said like, oh, Charlotte Mosley, I can't really stand you. And I hate the podcast and I don't like what you're putting out there. That could feel like a oof, like that could feel really hurtful. Because I think that, you know, there's this moment of some of us do it more than others, but I think we've all know what it feels like to have people pleasing tendencies. And that stems from trying to be perfect and trying to get other people to like you and trying to like yourself, putting your self-worth in others. And I see it happening. I did it as a kid. My mom told me that I was like a chameleon. Like I would kind of like become the people that I was with. And I remember thinking like, well, that's cool. That means I can get along with everybody. And I kind of tried to wear that as a badge of honor. And I would even like pick up people's accents. If I was like away with people and like all of a sudden I would like pick up their accent. So it took me a long time and a lot of therapy to realize exactly what was happening there. And that was people pleasing. And that was me not having a strong sense of identity and me not having this idea of like owning my own self-worth and putting, you know, my success in other people. So I just think that this conversation is so important because I know that this practice is so challenging. It's just hard.
It's really hard. And I think that's hilarious that you gained an accent from people. Oh my God. I can relate to that too. I mean, you and I both are very, very recovering people pleasers, but the tendencies are still there. And I remember when I'm going to jump around in my mind for a second, but when we're growing up and we're figuring out who we are, there's almost a sense of like we want to take pieces of people that we love and emulate that. We want to become like these little bits and pieces of everybody that we look up to. And I remember looking up to my cousin Alyssa. I still look up to her very much, but when we were younger, she had her lip was a different shape than mine. And I would go home after hanging out with her and I would pinch my lip in the center so it would look more like hers.
That is the cutest story.
It was so cute. I did it for years. And so like, I get how vulnerable we are when we're younger. Like we just want to be who we look up to, and having two sisters, I am a perfect blend of the two of them because those are our role models. But as we age, there's this beautiful thing that happens is we get to know ourselves and we get that opportunity to let our souls come forward and choose the things that we want to choose and do the things that we want to do and speak the way that we want to speak and all that good stuff. And
wait, I have to ask you, does your cousin know that you did that? You said you did it for years.
I did. I definitely told her, but I think I'm going to see her soon. I'll re-mention it because I don't remember like what her reaction was when I told her that. And it's funny too, Les, because you and I really, our friendship didn't blossom like this until just a couple years ago. And when I was in my early 20s, I had this notebook where I was following, this program. I think it was a book called 20 something 20 everything, and it was kind of like, how do you get to know yourself? And it was all these journaling prompts, and one of the prompt was like, write down 5 people that you look up to and things that you look up to about them, and you were my number 2 person. Oh. And I have to find that notebook so I can show you, but it was everything that you did or and do and are that I wanted to be like. And I can look back at that and see like I am like you in so many ways because you're a role model for me. You're a best friend for me. You show me the way in so many different ways, but I feel like I can emulate you in my own way, which is like, that's the goal, right? It's like getting to know ourselves in who we actually are while still honoring our teachers and role models.
Oh, I love that. And I do think that when you are with people, whether it's a group of people or one person, and that And you say, like, I love this quality about this person and that makes me love them more. And like, yeah, like, let's say like you're super patient and I'm like, wow, I love that Charlotte's super patient. I'm going to try to be more patient. That to me is serving yourself. Like, that to me feels good. That to me feels like I'm trying to uncover something inside of myself, or I'm trying to learn a skill that will help me. And that feels different than squeezing your lips. You know, I think it's like I'm with you. And I think when you find like-minded people, like, to me, like, a real metric of success for me is the company that I keep and the people that I choose to spend time with and the way that I feel when I leave that encounter, right? So if I can think about times in my life where I felt really successful, but if I would leave, like, you know, interactions with people or spending extended time with people, there was almost like a sense of like ickiness. Like there was this gnawing at me, kind of like, this isn't good for you. This isn't right. This is not helping you become the best version of who you are. So I think that when that emulation kind of occurs, I think this is like, there's something in this person that's helping me be better. And that's how I'm getting. And I love that you said that when we get to know ourselves better, like, I think that's the part of this mindfulness wellness practice is like, you know, quieting the mind, finding meditation, journaling. It is this journey to ourselves. It's this, or the, you know, svadhyaya, the study of the self to the self, right? To the self, like through the scripture, I'm learning about who I am. Through the study of yoga, I'm learning about who I am. And I think that is the true measure of success, is like learning who we are, unapologetically accepting ourselves, but then saying, but hey, there might be some work here to be better. There might be some work here to uncover the best version of me. Like my acupuncturist always says, like, you know, to get to my highest good, right? Like, so what do I need to do to get there? Who do I need to be around to get there? What qualities do I need, you know, to work on or to acquire so that I can reach my highest good?
That's so special. Mm. So true. And I also was thinking, like, as you were just talking, how sometimes the journey to get to know ourselves is almost like the journey to re-get to know ourselves, because those qualities, maybe not all of them, but a lot of those qualities, I bet, were present before we stopped skipping. Mm. Those qualities of just being silly and curious before we had to mask and armor and be like everybody else. That individuality is, I feel like the root of our individuality starts when we're younger, but we can deepen that individuality once we recognize that we're special individuals.
I love that. And everyone listening, before we get to our tips, because you know we have tips for you, before we get there, you know your homework is going to be to skip. Everybody is going to skip and find that joy. But I mean, you and I are yoga teachers and we are on the spiritual path. And whenever we can, we want to try to connect back to those teachings. And I know that you really wanted to talk about, you know, one of the limbs of yoga and how that can help in this way.
Yeah. So pratyahara, we've definitely talked about this limb before, but it's the withdrawal of the senses limb. And pratyahara, I feel like, is a superpower. And when we learn to use it, there's so many different scenarios that we can, like, take it out of our tool belt for. And one of the examples that I always use is pratyahara is this moment between stimulus and reaction. So it's this moment of pause where we can kind of like calculate what's going on and not be super affected by the things that we're taking in with our senses. But in the way that I think it relates to this conversation is pratyahara sometimes can be thought of like what your senses take in, almost like what you're feeding yourself, not in the sense of food, but it's what you're allowing yourself to take in through all of the different senses that you have.
Right. And so, like, the sense of nourishment, how are we nourishing ourselves? Yeah. Not necessarily like what are we eating, but how do we nourish? What's our sense of source of nourishment?
Exactly. Yeah. Thank you. That's such a better way of putting it. And so when we think about what types of accounts we follow, what types of comments we allow to be on our pages, what types of, I'll just stop there. What types of accounts do we follow? We can either be nourishing ourselves with those accounts and bringing ourselves up, or we can be harming ourselves and bringing ourselves down and comparing ourselves to these accounts and these comments and letting our power be elsewhere. So I think one of the cool ways to practice pratyahara in the sense of our own self-worth is deleting the negative comments. Like I said, unfollowing the accounts that make you feel less than, removing ourselves from the situations that make us feel unworthy.
And I think that, you know, in the ultimate sense, when we're all reaching our, you know, our highest good, we can peel back and we can say, I am unaffected by those comments. I am unaffected by those people. It is not interfering with my sense of peace at all because my senses are that withdrawn. But 99.99999% of us are just not there yet. So this is a way of practicing that, right? It's like taking that pause, taking that breath, acknowledging that that external stimuli is harmful and hurting us, and then figuring out the best way to practice non-reaction. And I think what you were saying when you were with Russ and you were like constantly consuming it, you know, because that's the narrative. The narrative is, I need to find the one good comment in the bad comment so that's my self-worth, right? So as we're practicing this, I think it is important to say, it's okay. Like, I'm taking my power back by saying, I'm not exposing myself to this. This is bull. I'm not doing it. Do you have any mantras that you say or things that you kind of repeat to help you? Because, like, I know we talked about this on the podcast last week, but it's like we learn what we practice, right? So it's like, what are we practicing? What are we saying to ourselves? What's the language?
Yeah, I don't have any specific ones that I repeat. But what I have been doing since this whole debacle started is when I'm driving or when I'm by myself listening to music, I'll catch the beat of the song and I'll make my own mantras. So I try to match the lyrics with my own thing. So it'll be like, I am, like, let's say the song was Old McDonald. I'd be like, I am pretty, I am smart, I'm really positive. And like, I will just keep going. And it's a silly way to feel really good. It's so cute. I highly recommend, you know what, that's also your homework. You skip and make up affirmations with your favorite nursery rhyme, because it's really cute and silly. And it just makes you realize that, like, you are defining your self-worth.
And I think that when you have kids, I'm going to do that with them. But really, if you're listening and you have young kids, what a beautiful thing. Or just finding a mantra, right? Like, just like whatever it is that you need to repeat to yourself. Like, I am worthy. I do not give away my power. I am in control of my own power. Like, any of those goals that we have for ourselves, we have to speak life into that.
Yeah, that just solidifies them. I want to share one thing before we give our last tip. My sister Gretchen, a few months ago, when either me or my other sister Bridget was experiencing again some negativity on TikTok, where commenters were basically saying things that were untrue. My sister Gretchen was like, think about it. Like, you are so sure in the fact that your hair is red. Like, what if you can just imagine that the commenters are commenting like, you're brunette, you're blonde. And it's almost silly. It's just like, no, like, that is just not true. And I'm not offended by that. If somebody was going to comment saying you're brunette, I would almost giggle, because I'm like, that is just wrong. There's zero truth to that statement. So if we can be so self-assured in the fact that, like, I am a good person, then a comment like, you're a bad person, it almost makes me giggle, because I'm so sure, I'm so self-assured in the fact that I am a good person. So all that other stuff is just noise.
Wow, that's Gretch. I know you listen to the podcast. Women are wise. I love that.
Yeah.
I absolutely love that. And like that, so like, here it is. Now, again, we have to practice this, because she said that to you a few weeks ago, and then you had this happen just like this week, right? So it's not easy, but what a great benchmark for that comment is going to be as meaningless to me as somebody telling me that I have red hair, right? And I can just be like, no, I don't. That's so silly. And done. Move on. End of story. Like you said, I have no offense to that. If there's something different about, like, somebody commenting on, like you said, something that's just so obvious, and it's not, most of us don't feel, wouldn't feel offended. I mean, I guess there are people that are really attached to their hair color, if you're listening and that's the case, but I love that. That's really, that's good. We need to talk more about that.
But the last thing that I just want to say with this is just the power of, I mean, this is why we do the podcast, but the power of surrounding ourselves with people that enhance our self-worth, the people that hype us up, the people that remind us that we are good people, that we are strong, that we are beautiful, that we are successful. Like, the more people that we can surround ourselves with that remind us all of these good qualities, the more that's going to solidify in our minds.
I totally agree. That really connects. Like, that's our last tip, but we kind of have been saying that, weaving that all throughout. So I hope that that's like a really big takeaway. And that's why we created this virtual community, because we know that it's not always easy when you're healing. A lot of times, like, your circle gets smaller. So this podcast is here for you to help that circle feel like nourishing and big and bountiful and beautiful, and all are welcome. Even if you say that Charlotte has blonde hair.
In which case, I would say thank you for your input. You are wrong.
You are wrong. All right, stronger together. You're skipping, you're creating a mantra, and you are finding out, you know, what it is that you're going to say when somebody says something that you think attacks your self-worth, because nobody can take that power away from you.
Yeah, that power is yours, baby. Mm-hmm. So
we love you.
Thanks, everybody. Talk to you next time.
Bye, Char.
Bye.
We hope you love that episode of Stronger Together.
And if you did, can you please share it with your friends and your family and your neighbors?
Yes, help us get this out there so that we can connect with more people.
And guess what? Spotify allows you to rate now. So if you're listening on Spotify, can you please rate for us? And yes. Apple Podcasts lets you review. So review.
5 stars on Spotify and tell us what you love about the podcast. We are so happy that you're part of this community.
We love you.